Good afternoon, everyone. It's not that late. I was going to say we bring you warm greetings from North Carolina, but the weather is better here, so we just bring you greetings from North Carolina. I'll be picking up where A. Boone left off. She talked about bringing this project to life, so I'll go walk through some of the specific activities that we did as part of this intervention. So I also wanted to highlight the other contributors to this work as well. So this presentation will consist of our learning objectives, of course, some background information, our innovation here on Project East, broadly, and then specifically going to some of the sample components from some of our intervention activities, advantages that we see to this paired approach, and also conclusion and some implications for our future work. So learning objectives today are to identify novel ways to inform and educate rural minority communities about HIV clinical trials opportunities, and also to discuss the advantages of a targeted multi-level approach to clinical trials outreach. So we need to start from somewhere. Start with the foundation of work that's already been done in this area around clinical trials outreach with historically underrepresented minorities. And wanted to highlight some of the work of people who've been doing this for quite some time. So Elsevier and colleagues in 1992 did an intervention with minorities at a local clinic, which consisted of informational materials, outreach workers, transportation assistance. A. Boone talked about geographic accessibility as an issue. Social work services, ancillary services, and peer support groups all around clinical trials enrollment for minorities. Friedberg and colleagues in 2001 also had an informational intervention that consisted of an eligible participant speaking with a research associate for about 5 minutes about what a clinical trial entailed, the purpose, the role, and the availability of that specific clinic. In 2009, Volkman and colleagues also did an informational intervention with a research assistant with the provision of informational brochures that talked about the trials that were currently available, as well as the contact information for individuals who were interested in participating in those trials. Most recently, we have GWADS and colleagues in 2010. This is the most recent and one of the most comprehensive that we found in the literature that consisted of group sessions that were about 5.5 hours total, 3 peer education experiences, and a brief 30-minute individual session in which they spoke with someone from the ACTU or the AIDS Clinical Trials Unit. So for Project East, we wanted to build upon some of this previous work. We did see in the literature where we could kind of fill a gap, predominantly because the previous efforts were conducted with people living with HIV/AIDS and did not include concurrent implementation of these interventions with service providers, so providing them with the same information as the people living with HIV/AIDS. Secondly, the 4 interventions that I mentioned previously were all conducted in clinical settings, so we essentially moved from the major academic medical centers out into rural communities to do this work. So we had this paired approach where we talked with local service providers in the 6 counties that A. Boone mentioned previously, and also their clients that they saw within their clinic in the rural communities. All these programs were data-informed and data-driven, and I'll walk through tables on the next slide showing you what they told us and what we did as a result of what they told us for the intervention. And this all occurred in the first phase of the study before we did anything else. I wanted to highlight that the total contact time for both of our groups, for service providers, they had 4 hours of contact time with the intervention materials, and we also followed up with newsletters after completion of the intervention to reinforce some of the key concepts that they had learned as part of the intervention sessions. And for people who are HIV positive, they had 6 contact hours with this information, and they also received 4 flyers after completion of that to, again, reinforce some of the things that they were learning as part of their participation in the HIV clinical trials outreach efforts. So, as I said, data-informed and data-driven. Just want to orient you with this table. This is strictly service provider data. On the left side of the data, you'll see the themes that we pulled from qualitative data collection in phase 1. And on the right, you'll see where we thought we needed to focus our intervention efforts. So I'll start at top left. We definitely heard a resounding. There's a lack of information about clinical trials and clinical trials opportunities, which spoke to the need of us to come up with different ways to attack this problem through brochures, through discussions with local resources, and also provision of this information through the web. They also talked about limited access or capacity to conduct clinical trials research in rural areas. This is a very real problem. So I wanted to provide an opportunity for them to connect with clinical trial site personnel, also thinking about some other local people who they wouldn't think about on a normal day that they could tap into as a resource for support and establishing these networks and building and establishing new networks as well. We live in the rural South. HIV stigma is very pervasive, so we heard this a lot across all of our data collection groups. But this spoke to the need to educate broadly about HIV and also about clinical trials opportunities in depth so that both parties understood exactly what this process entailed. And most importantly, to service providers, they talked about a lack of familiarity with the referral process. You know, will I lose my client in their regular care if they decide to participate in a clinical trial? So that spoke to the need to talk about this process from the onset, from the point that you refer your client to a clinical trial to the point that the trial ends. What exactly does this look like? And we'll walk through an activity in a moment. For people living with HIV/AIDS, we definitely saw in our individual interviews and phase one that participants conflated HIV care with HIV clinical trials, even after being provided with the definition as part of the interview. There was definitely a lot of conflation around that. So that spoke to the need of us to talk about this entire continuum of HIV care, from prevention, testing, research, and care as well. They also, as part of interview data, were asked, you know, what are some barriers that you see to clinical trials outreach? And they gave us a lot. As we said earlier, we don't know about them. Transportation, we're 2 or 3 hours away. Time off of work and childcare. So we came up with an activity that we won't detail today, but basically to have them generate some solutions to some of those barriers that they face commonly. We talked about Tuskegee, experimentation, guinea pigs, things of that sort, which spoke to the need of us needing to talk about the ethical bodies that are in place to protect participant rights. We have the Institutional Review Board. We have the Data Safety Monitoring Board. We have at BASIC, the informed consent document that you should be provided, not as just a piece of paper for you to sign, but a discussion for you to have a research staff so that you know your rights before you sign the dotted line to participate in the trial. And lastly, we're in small communities. People talk. Fear or breaches of confidentiality and privacy among research study staff and also their local medical staff. So again, reinforcing some of these bodies that are in place, but also thinking about ways that they as participants can protect their own confidentiality and reinforcing what research staff have to do to also protect their confidentiality. So this is an overview of the session. She briefly told you there were 4 sessions. This details everything we did with service providers in 60 minutes. We grabbed them during their lunch hours, and these are some of the key things we talked about. And just wanted to basically highlight here the different approaches that we use to get core concepts across. We use presentations, we use discussions, interactive role plays, homework assignments, follow-up newsletters, so different approaches to get a clinical trials basics and also some of the other things around skill building and support that a provider could or should need. People live with HIV/AIDS. In order to make sure that everyone had an opportunity to truly understand the information, we extended these 2 sessions beyond service providers, but these were still 60 minutes in duration. And again, wanted to just highlight, again, differences in the ways in which we carried out the intervention. Discussions, skits, presentations, interactive activities, which I'll walk you all through one of them, and also homework activities with finding their own clinical trials. And both groups had an opportunity to sit down and talk with the scientist who does this every day. So we invited a clinician from the AIDS Clinical Trials Unit to be a warm body in the room and field some of the questions that people genuinely had about being a participant in clinical trials. So both of the groups were provided that opportunity at the very end of the session. So the next slide, I'm going to go through 3 or 4 activities and let you know what our objective was with this specific activity and the targeted approach that we use for each one of our groups and Project East. So at BASIC, starting with, what is a clinical trial? So we open up the sessions, both service providers and people living with HIV/AIDS. What comes to your mind when you hear the word clinical trials? What does this mean to you? And we got everything from Tuskegee to some not so in line things about clinical trials, but just an opportunity to see what people were thinking. And after we had this brainstorming activity, then to make sure everyone was on the same page for the duration of the series, did the following. Provision of a poster that says, a clinical trial is a research study to determine whether new drugs or other therapies are both safe and effective for the prevention or treatment of disease. Because we're looking at the safety of drugs, they're often referred to as drug studies. So this was provided to both groups. What we did after that was go through the different phases of clinical trials. So most people know animal studies and laboratory studies, and after that, it's kind of a blank. So we wanted to pick up there and let people know about the different types of studies, what the purpose is at each one of these stages, what the participants are doing, and what ultimately researchers want to know. We also talked about the different types of clinical trials. A lot of people don't know that there are 7 or 8 different types of clinical trials at BASIC that they could be in. If you're a woman, there are specific trials for women. If you have never been on an HIV clinical trial regimen, then they have people for recent infection. There are lots of different types. So we wanted to educate both groups on these as well. And with people who are positive, we had them kind of role play or read a vignette, and we had posters on the wall where they were associated with the different types of trials. Drove home the importance of minority participation in clinical trials, as she said, in terms of generalizability and access to new treatments and just altruism. And very important to both groups were ethical considerations around clinical trials. At basic, clinical equipoise. Researchers genuinely do not know when they conduct a trial what treatment is better than the other, otherwise they would not be conducting the trial. So this is something that we drive home in a common thread throughout the entire series. And also talking about IRB, DSMB, and informed consent, which leads me into the second activity, informed consent. So the objective here for both groups was to be able to at least explain the informed consent process. For service providers, we did one of the most famous shows at 7 p.m. on whatever your local channel is, Clinical Trials Jeopardy. So this group was provided with a real consent form from a clinical trial that had already expired, but just wanted to show them what it looked like. It's not always a two-page document, it may be 16, 15, or 30, but wanted to give them this document and in order to get them familiar with some of the major components, which you see across the top of the Jeopardy table. So general information about the clinical trial. What are some things that you or your client would want to know? Rights. Who do they need to call, or what are some of the things that are being protected to or in place to protect patient rights? Risks and benefits associated with that specific trial, and also just the general who's who. If I have questions about my right as a participant, who do I call? If I have questions about the study, who do I call? So just an innovative way to get them familiar with the consent document, and they had that to take home with them at the end of the study as well. On the next slide, I'll show you some of the sample questions we had. This is one of our funnest activities. But what is the purpose of the study? How long will participation last? What if you have questions about your rights? Who do you contact? On what pages can you find the risks and discomforts or benefits associated with this study? And name three ways that your privacy will be protected in the study. So these were, they selected rights for 200. These would be one of the questions that came up. And whatever team scored the highest got bragging rights in the clinic for the next week. For people living with HIV/AIDS, we did not want to burden them with a 20-page document. We did provide that to them if they wanted to look at it after the session. But again, wanted them to be familiar with the major subheadings just as we did with service provider. So what's the purpose of the study? How many subjects will be in the study? How long will your participation last? What happens if you take part in the study? And will it cost you anything to participate? So these were large posters that we put around the room, 8 of them in total, and started off the exercise letting them know, this is what's in place. This is your opportunity to ask questions. If you don't get all of your questions answered the first time, come back a second time. If you don't get them answered the second time, come back a third time. But these are some of the key things you need to know on a consent document. So we had 8 posters around the room, and we started the exercise with that, and then had an opportunity for them to take off what we called their participant hat and to put on their researcher hat. So we had them create their own informed consent document. And I served as, or a facilitator served as, the head researcher on this study. And I'll read you the case study that we did for participants, and then I'll show you exactly what the document looked like. So, in the United States, more and more people are having sweet tooth problems. In other words, they are craving sugar all day. As a result of this sweet tooth syndrome, people are cranky, they're unproductive at work and home, and their overall health is not good. We, as researchers, want to find the best way to solve this problem. So we're testing 2 medications, Skittles and Starburst. When I say we, I mean the local university, Heath University. We are not representatives of Skittles, and we are not representatives of Starburst. So our task today is to put together a consent form for potential study participants in the Sweet Tooth study. I, as a facilitator, would have the master document up on the projector screen, and we also provided participants with a hard copy of a blank consent form, which I'll show you. And also wanted to drive home that it's very important to note that the information that we'll see in each of these major subheadings are decided before participants even come into the study. But just wanted to give them an opportunity to think about some of the things that researchers must do to protect them when they get into a study. So we'll see if I can do what the IT man told me properly. And I can. So this is the blank document that we provided to all the study participants. Started off by reminding them of some general things they should know about research studies. Their participation is voluntary. You have the right to get all the information you need. If it takes 2 or 3 trips, you have the right to do that. You can always opt out if you don't want to continue with the study, and everything must be approved by the IRB. So every participant has this blank form, and we basically open the floor. Okay, and we have a bag of Skittles and Starburst on the table. We want to do this study. What's the purpose of the study? And it's a free-for-all, very fun activity in which people have an opportunity to really think about all of these things on a consent form. So we walk through the purpose, how long participants will be in the study. Very important piece are the risks and benefits, and we get everything from cavities to fats. Protection of participants' rights, learning about de-identifying information, your name won't be used or linked to any other documents, and people who they have the right, if they have questions, to contact. So very different way to get some of the key concepts across as it relates to informed consent. And again, we provide all study participants with all of the providers with a consent document. If the people living with HIV/AIDS wanted to see the consent form, we had copies available for them, but did not want to overburden them with that quantity of information. No, okay. So the next objective that we wanted to meet for both groups was to explain what this whole referral to participation process looked like. Referral to a trial does not mean that a client would be enrolled. There are several other steps involved to determine their eligibility, and we wanted to do this through essentially pictorial representation. So we created a flowchart, the brainchild of several researchers of the team. The text is not there, just wanted to show you a general outline of what it looked like. But starting from the referral of the person living with HIV/AIDS to an HIV specialty clinic, moving on to a pre-assessment by a clinical trials nurse before they even go to be screened at the clinical trial site, counseling and consenting with informed consent, physical assessments that you see enrollment does not happen until step 5, also talking about the study participants' responsibilities, and we have two additional steps that talk about what happens after the study ends. Do they tell you what the results were? Do you get a letter? Do you still get treatment? So making sure that both groups understand this information. For service providers, they received a handout to take with them. For people living with HIV/AIDS, they also received a handout, but we love posters on this project. Large posters around the room that associated with each one of these steps that had a pictorial association with each of them. So referral to the clinic, we had someone standing at a clinic, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank, shelf thing in front of a clinic, the counter at the clinic, I'm sorry. Step 2, we had someone talking on a telephone. Step 3, somebody talking with a doctor about the informed consent process. So some sort of pictorial representation or association for them to walk away with as well. As I said, we sent newsletters and flyers to all participants after the intervention ended, just in an effort to reemphasize some of the key points from the session and to let them know what was also coming up in subsequent letters, testimonial of other providers and providers and consumers or participants in clinical trials. And for this particular lesson, we walked them through the different places and the different ways to locate clinical trials. So a reminder here with the sample clinical trial ad. This came out every 6 weeks after the intervention ended. So as you can see, this is a very interactive, engaged approach to educating both service providers and people living with HIV/AIDS. This paired approach, of course it was rooted in theory, but also the objectives that we wanted to meet, this paired approach ensured that the content was matched, although the delivery method was different. And concurrent implementation optimizes the impact of this intervention. We have everybody together at this specific time frame getting the same information. Greater potential for wide dissemination and acceptability. This bridges the gap between research and practice. There are tons of grants out there, translation from science to practice. This is one of the innovative ways to move clinical trials from the major academic medical centers out to the communities where people need to learn about them. And this is the second theory-rooted intervention as it relates to minorities enrolled in HIV clinical trials. Guaz and colleagues in 2010, theirs was rooted in theory, and they also had various evaluation components, but this would be the second. In terms of impact of this innovation, we won't quite know until the pilot test is complete. We don't know if this will be positive or negative. That's part of research. This multifaceted approach, by equipping service providers and people living with HIV/AIDS with this information and the skills, skits, role plays, things like that, to help them make an informed decision. And also, this addresses the need for minorities to have the opportunity to at least participate in clinical trials research by targeting several levels of the socio-ecological framework. And we'll move on to the next presentation, which is me again.
Thank you.